Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 9th of May. A just re-released report from the University of Michigan shows that smoking, drug abuse, and obesity are the top health concerns among adults regarding children in their communities. But there are a number of marked differences in concerns among those of different races, ethnicities, and educational levels. Our guest this hour is Dr. Matthew Davis. He's Associate Professor of Pediatrics, Communicable Diseases, Internal Medicine, and Public Policy at the University of Michigan, Director of the Fellowship Program in Pediatric Health Services Research, and his clinical interests are the health and wellness promotion, asthma, and adolescent care. And he is the director of the National Poll on Children's Health. We'll be welcoming phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Dr. Davis, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's a pleasure.
It's the first of – no, this is the second, I guess, of three studies. Tell me what you've been looking at overall.
Well, we've recently launched this national poll on children's health, and what we're doing is to release 2 to 4 reports from each poll. The results that you're talking about today are from a poll that we conducted in March 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal here was to try to capture the a snapshot of what adults think are the major health problems facing children in the U.S. today. Although there's a fair bit of debate in state and federal legislatures about what are important health problems for kids, we were concerned that actually we hadn't heard the voice of the public.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're trying to do with this poll.
And it's interesting that the voice of the public, be the people, parents or not parents, had similar responses.
That was quite interesting and somewhat surprising to us. We felt it was important to get the perspectives of parents and also adults who are not parents to see whether there were differences. But there really were many more similarities than differences. And in terms of these top problems, they actually agree quite closely.
Mm-hmm. You've been quoted as saying you found that major race ethnicity groups differed when it came to the top three health concerns for children. What differences were notable?
Well, there are a couple that are worth emphasizing. First is that among African-American respondents on the poll, teen pregnancy was far and away the greatest concern they have in terms of children's health. That actually matches what we know about teen pregnancy rates that differ across race and ethnic groups, where black teens do have twice the rate of teen pregnancy that whites do, although not so much higher than Hispanics. What's remarkable is that we have seen declines for adolescents in all race and ethnic groups over the last 10 years, and yet this remains a major concern.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast, Hispanic parents, or Hispanic adults, beg your pardon, were likely to rate childhood obesity higher than were adults from the black and white communities. That actually matches quite well with what we know about rates of obesity in among Hispanic youth compared to rates of obesity among non-Hispanic white youth. The problem may be that among African-American respondents, even though the rates of obesity among African-American youth are quite similar to those among Hispanics, the level of concern is not as high.
Mm-hmm. And you found that great concern among everybody, way in the top three, was smoking.
Smoking was very consistently reported as a very large concern for adults in this poll. I think that reflects what adults see in terms of the consequences of smoking among adults. And, of course, the reason that many kids do start smoking is they don't perceive those bad health consequences like heart disease, lung disease, and forms of cancer down the road. And yet adults do see those things, and they have themselves consequences from it, or perhaps family members who've run into problems or have passed away. And so I think adults really do see the ravages of smoking still as a problem and worry about kids starting.
Yeah. And what about the rates of smoking among young people? Have they gone down?
Well, actually, one of the best sources of information about that is also here from the University of Michigan, something called the Monitoring the Future study. And they have tracked rates of smoking among high schoolers over the past more than a decade and have found that the rates of smoking among high schoolers have actually dropped by half. In the past 10 years. That's great news. The bit of discouraging news, though, is over the last 2 to 3 years, it seems that the drop has stalled. So it's harder and harder to make progress on the problem of teen smoking.
Mm-hmm. Other concerns in the top 10, alcohol abuse. Certainly a few years ago, we heard about teenagers abusing alcohol. It had become a drug of choice, parties all over the country, where even some parents were serving teenagers alcohol, thinking if it's in my house, it can't be problematic. Where do we stand with that?
Well, you're right. We found in our poll that alcohol abuse by teens remains a major concern of adults in the U.S. I think that, you know, alcohol abuse doesn't get nearly the press that problems like smoking and drug abuse do, and that's a problem. I think that in my own practice as a pediatrician, alcohol is more of a silent problem, and it's difficult to get families talking about it, and yet when it does come out, it's a major health problem for kids. And we've heard more recently in past years about binge drinking on college campuses. And the thing is that doesn't come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
There are patterns of alcohol use that start before college, and there are opportunities here, I think, for parents and for healthcare providers to try to do more about the problem of alcohol use among younger teens.
Mm-hmm. Is this partially a problem because there's a lot of alcohol abuse among adults, and so it's very much hidden in the closet?
Well, you're right that alcohol abuse is a problem among adults, and similar to among teens, I think remains more of a sense of keeping it in secret. And I think there is sometimes a distorted sense for families of just how safely they're consuming alcohol. One of the challenges we have in the medical community is that at very low levels of alcohol consumption, say a half glass of wine a day, there actually appear to be some health benefits for adults in terms of preventing heart disease. And so it's a mixed message that can be hard to walk a safe line. And I try to keep the discussion of alcohol use out in the open as I care for teens and adults.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Davis, tell me how the poll got at this issue. You somehow looked at the child's emotional health as well, and adults who were reporting emotional health as being excellent or very good were less likely to view certain areas as problematic than others. How do you determine the child's emotional health in this poll?
Well, there could be a lot of questions you might ask. What we chose was a standard question used by many other researchers, which asks, how would you describe the emotional health of your child? And for survey respondents we had with more than one child, we asked them to answer it for their oldest child. And there are five response options: excellent, very good, good, fair, or poor. And we found that among the adults who rated their children's emotional health lower on the scale, so towards the end of good, fair, or poor, they were significantly more likely to rate drug abuse as a major concern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to know in terms of a chicken and egg or a cart and horse problem which comes first. Is it the emotional health that then may lead a teen to look to drugs, or is it that there's a drug problem and that leads to challenges in emotional health? But the two are closely linked in this study, and I think that's a warning bell that we need to really listen to, and it's the first that we recall seeing this in a national poll of this scope.
What kinds of drugs are adolescents abusing these days?
Good question, and the Monitoring the Future study, also from here at the University of Michigan, it does do an excellent job of tracking that over time. They have found that traditional drugs of abuse, say marijuana, cocaine, and drugs available at parties such as ecstasy, seem to have actually decreased somewhat in use over the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the very concerning news from the Monitoring the Future study is that prescription drugs such as OxyContin.
Really?
Yes. And other drugs, say, for example, the stimulants that can be used to treat attention deficit disorder are becoming more often abused by kids in ways that were never intended by the prescribers.
And do we know why? Do we know why those are the drugs of choice now?
I don't know that people have a great explanation for it. One of the obvious challenges is that physicians need to exercise a lot of caution in prescribing these drugs that have the potential for abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, there is an understandable interest in the American community about trying to address the problem of, say, attention deficit disorder. So at the same time, we're trying to do a better job treating attention deficit disorder, and for some people, medications may work. We have an issue where these medications may fall into the hands of people for whom they were not prescribed, and that can be abused that way.
Mm-hmm. Internet safety, that was something that was cited as a concern. What do we mean by internet safety, and why is it that mothers are more concerned about this, or women are, than men?
Well, we felt strongly as we were designing this poll that we wanted to include internet safety as a health issue, because when we talk about internet safety, we're talking about the possibility of predators online and unwanted information that can make children upset. So this is more of a mental health issue, although it could potentially turn into a physical health issue if there were some if an adolescent met somebody online and tried to meet them, etc. Now, the fact that we found that women, whether they were parents or not parents, were more likely to report this as a concern than men, I think points to the fact that typically, more typically, at least we hear in the news, that women and girls are more often the targets of the internet predators than are boys. So I think there's a different perception between the genders about who's more at risk.
Mm-hmm. Sexually transmitted infections. It's interesting. You talk about these different problem areas, and you can remember decades when those were huge discussions among the American populace, and STDs were one of those.
Well, you're right, Kathleen. And whenever you develop a list like this, or you measure the top concerns like this, it's fascinating to watch how the public perceives the different risks here. Of course, HIV and other sexually transmitted infections remain a major threat to people's health.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 10, especially 15 or 20 years, the sense of risk from HIV has really diminished, in large part because the medical community and pharmaceutical companies and researchers have developed really fantastic ways to try to treat HIV with medications. What's missing from the story for many people is that although the medications may be effective, you have to take them. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And HIV cannot be eradicated from the system, at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have it, you have it. And so one of the challenges, I think, for HIV prevention programs in many communities is that the sense of risk in the U.S. population about HIV has really gone down as we've gotten better at treating it.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Dr. Matthew Davis, Associate Professor of Pediatrics, Communicable Diseases, Internal Medicine, and Public Policy at the University of Michigan. He is Director of the National Poll on Children's Health, and we're talking about what the major concerns when adults are asked to list what their major concerns are when it comes to children's health, particularly adolescent health, what those answers are. Smoking cited by 40% of adults as the top health concern for children, but there are differences among different ethnic groups. So teen pregnancy is number one among African Americans. Obesity is number one among Hispanics. What do you worry about with our young people? What kinds of health concerns would you put at the top of the list? Are there some of these when it comes to drugs and the drugs that young people are using that become a drug of choice for a certain decade, and why is that? And how do we tackle that problem? The rate of teen pregnancy has gone down fairly significantly. To what do you attribute that? What about obesity rates? That certainly is an issue that has been very much in the news the past few years. For the first time, many reports are saying our children may not live as long as their parents, and that's completely due to obesity. And how do we take on, as a society, all of these health concerns for our children? Here's the phone number. Feel free to call us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. All our lines are open right now, and we would like to hear from you. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The top overall health concerns for children in the United States. Number one is smoking, according to the results from the University of Michigan C.S. Mott Children's Hospital National Poll on Children's Health. Also in the top 10, drug abuse, childhood obesity, alcohol abuse, motor vehicle accidents, teen pregnancy, internet safety, school violence, We'll talk about that next. Sexually transmitted infections and abuse and neglect. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We'll start some calls, and we go to Kevin from Kenosha. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I just had a quick idea of why certain drugs are so popular among younger people. And being fairly young myself, I was only out of high school about 4 years ago. And I remember being in school and having kids get, you know, prescribed certain things like, you know, Oxycontin, and then even, you know, smaller things like Ritalin and stuff like that. You know, and instead of taking them, they were sold. You know?
They'd sell them in school?
Yeah.
Huh.
A lot of people don't even think that happens, but, I mean, being, you know, around it so much, I can definitely attest to that, the fact that it was always happening. So.
And it would be sold with, what was the selling point? This is going to make you stay awake longer or feel better or what?
Well, Oxycontin, a lot of people took it just because it gives you, like, this numb feeling. And nobody really takes certain things. Like, a lot of, I see, you know, things like 2020 and all these news programs say that, you know, kids take these certain drugs to stay focused and to stay, you know, attuned to what they're doing. And that's pretty much about as far from the truth as I've ever seen. I've never, ever seen a kid take things like, you know, because a lot of kids used to snort Adderall. You know, they'd get Adderall, they'd crunch it up and snort it because it would just, you know, make you feel really just hyped up. But never is it to stay more focused on your homework or what you're doing in school. And it's kind of a weird thing that it would be so misinformed, you know? People aren't getting the right information about things, and they're not doing the studies well enough. And I'm not saying that certain studies aren't right, you know, but being around it so much and things like that, I've seen a lot, and I've just totally been around it enough to know.
Right. Yeah, stay with us. Dr. Davis may have some things to ask you as well. Dr. Davis.
Well, I think Kevin brings up something that is a major problem in schools, and it's something that I hear about from my patients. He's absolutely right. Kids who are prescribed medications at times do sell them. And he's also right that, you know, the kids who are buying them aren't the ones who are saying, gosh, you know, I can't concentrate enough on my work. I think I'll go ask so-and-so for another you know, tablet of the medicine that he or she was prescribed. This is about altering how you're feeling, like alcohol is, like street drugs are. Prescription drugs, when they're used in this way, are about altering how you're feeling. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind, and I think that adults who responded to this poll are worried about, is that this is so such a common goal for many teens. To try to change how they're feeling, whether you want to call them mind-altering substances or mood-altering substances, it's about getting away from how you're feeling right now. Mm-hmm. And that is why when I talk with families about this, really what we're talking about is trying to get a sense of what is the person who's using these medications in this way trying to get away from.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they going through? Is there a way to support them through that? Either through counseling or other activities and other supports with friends and family. Kevin's absolutely right. This is a common thing, and we need to understand it as a way to get some escapism.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Another thing is that, you know, a lot of these kids, I think when, you know, prescribing drugs to certain kids, you know, I was raised very old school. I never, ever was given medication. I was never, you know, I was nothing like that. So, you know, I can't say that, you know, from experience how certain things feel, but a lot of these kids I noticed that are on medication and stuff, you know, a lot of times they go in one or two times to this, you know, whatever psychiatrist or whatever doctor it might be, and they're prescribed, you know, whatever, without really being, you know, fully, what is the word I'm looking for, diagnosed, I guess. You know, a lot of these kids might have certain intentions. I had a friend who actually did this himself, and I wish I would have said something more about it, but he went into a shrink, you know, because his mom, you know, well, I think you're crazy, and so he went into the shrink, acted a little weird on purpose, got these drugs and sold them at school, you know? And so I think people, you know, doctors and whatnot need to evaluate certain patients more before they, you know, give them a prescription for such, you know, strong medication.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. It makes an interesting point. Is it an indication, Dr. Davis, well, it's an indication that we're treating people with a lot more drugs, and some would say that's a good thing because we're keeping certain kinds of anxieties under control. It is interesting, though, that this becomes the drug that particularly high school kids are selling in school and taking in school rather than selling marijuana or other things, right?
Well, yes. In general, in the American mindset, we tend to look towards medications as a way to take care of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges for any mental health issue, whether it's among teens or adults or younger children, is that we have a mental health care system that is smaller than what we need, that is less well-funded than what we need.
Right.
And so many studies over the years have shown that while medications can be helpful for some conditions, many times counseling or therapy, mental health therapy, is at least as good, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that we don't have broad enough access to good mental health therapy, mental health providers, or enough of them, really, to meet the true need. And so primary care providers like myself are oftentimes faced with a decision about, well, gee, should I go ahead and prescribe a certain medication, an antidepressant maybe, or a stimulant for attention deficit, based on my evaluation, versus having this person wait several months for an evaluation by a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And what will that mean in terms of the patient's overall level of treatment and immediacy of treatment?
Well, do you feel comfortable doing that? And then do you want to speak for other pediatricians? I don't know. You can't speak as to whether or not they're feeling comfortable doing this, but are a lot of pediatricians prescribing medications?
Well, there's been some excellent research, not by our group, but by others, to show that there are very different levels of comfort across the entire pediatrician community and across other providers, such as family physicians who treat children and adolescents. So that in general, providers who also see adults, like family physicians or people like me who've been trained in both adult internal medicine and pediatrics, are generally more comfortable prescribing medications that fall in the realm of mental health care than are pediatricians, for whom this is a more unusual circumstance. There are some pediatricians who are very comfortable, but they are not in the majority.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does run the gamut. And for parents out there who are wondering about this, it is definitely worth asking your child's doctor just how comfortable they are and how much experience they have, because you'll want to know the answer to those questions as you go down this path.
Right. School violence, certainly very much in the news these days. Where did that rank?
So school violence, in our poll of the top 10 U.S. children's health concerns, rated at number 8, with 24% of adults nationwide saying it was a big health problem for children. Now, as you mentioned, this has been in the news a lot recently because of the Virginia Tech tragedy, and we actually conducted this poll before the Virginia Tech tragedy.
Hmm.
So it's entirely possible, like just about anything on this list, that with current events, the ordering of the problems on the poll could change somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
What is striking to us is that it did rank among the top 10. higher than things such as childhood cancer, higher than eating disorders, higher than food contamination, which, of course, now has been very recently in the news. So school violence is something that, especially since the Columbine event several years ago, has now become part of the parent and, in general, adult mindset in the U.S., and that's extremely unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. And is that because there actually is a whole lot more school violence, or we're just seeing sensationalized news reporting? Obviously, it's a legitimate concern, but is there a lot more of it?
Good question. And my sense is that there have been more episodes. Certainly, we have more extensive, comprehensive media coverage of any given episode. But I think what's happened in the mindset of parents that I've talked to is that schools, for decades, were seen as a site of safety,
mm-hmm.
and a place that you hoped would be as safe as your home for your children.
Right.
And you know, now as a parent myself, I get communications from our school principal about lockdown procedures,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it's a very different era where the level of preparedness and the stress for school personnel is really, I think, at a level that they haven't really seen before.
Yeah. What's wrong with us that we have to have lockdowns in schools? What's wrong with us? That's just...
Well, I think the preparedness is actually a good thing.
Yeah. But you shouldn't even have to have such concerns.
Well, it's I think it's unfortunate. I think that it's... I mean, I'm sad as a parent that those notes come home. But I am pleased that schools everywhere are putting preparedness plans into place. I think ultimately those will keep, you know, as many children and school staff safe as possible in the event of something horrible happening.
Thanks so much, Kevin. We want to do another subject, but thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Kurt next. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. I have a bias from which I speak, which I should state up front so folks can hear what I say within the context of that bias. I'm a Lutheran pastor. Under all of a vast majority of these sort of maladaptive behaviors, my other background is in mental health for 11 years before seminary. I see, the drug use, the obesity, the smoking, the violence. I really wonder if underneath all of this is a sort of lack of centeredness in relationships, which I would refer to as a spiritual problem in the culture, a tendency to commoditize everything, including problems, illness, everything as ways to make money. And I'm wondering if our kids are growing up in a culture which basically seems a whole kind of nothing really matters unless you're making money, and making money is all that matters. And the real problems they have as far as connecting with each other come from the fact that they haven't connected with adults, and because adults are all out there trying to find a way to keep the payments going.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll hang up and listen.
You don't need to, Kurt. You can stay with us if you'd like. Dr. Davis.
Well, Kurt obviously has a pretty deep background as far as these behaviors and the connectedness between people is concerned. I would agree with him entirely that the majority of the top 10 concerns here have their roots in our behavioral choices and the behavioral choices of our of children in our communities. And the more that we can discuss behavioral choices with our kids in an open way that expresses the values that we hope they'll adopt, I think the better off they'll be. That can be within the context of a spiritual community. It can be in the context of other linkages in the communities. I think spiritual linkages are some of the strongest in communities.
Mm-hmm.
But I always encourage the families that I see to work on the connections between themselves and have those opportunities to talk. I think one of the challenges in terms of having family time to talk is that the TV is on so much. And so I encourage families to turn off the TV and have discussions instead about what was a major thing that happened that day for them. Mm-hmm. It can be a good thing or a bad thing, but to have that discussion and get the parents' input and responses to what happened for kids can be a really good opportunity for learning.
Mm-hmm. How do you, as a pastor, deal with these kinds of issues with adolescents, Kurt?
It's very difficult because of time issues.
Right.
We were just discussing with a group the other day. I mean, how do I be a pastor for people in their 20s? Most of these people are working two or three part-time jobs. Mm-hmm. Their hours for the next week are given them this week. There is
right.
no
yes.
traditional Sabbath time. There's no regulation in their lives by which they might have some reflective time.
Mm.
All of their time is spent frantically, literally frantically, trying to find ways to put away enough money or get an education or sometimes raise a child as a single person or whatever. And it seems as though reflective time is, you know, basically either not available or downplayed in its validity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty rough as far as trying to find a way to get people to even have time, even families to get together and sit around a table like we kind of most of us grew up with, as the supper table is the time to connect and you know, say what happened in your day and get adults' reactions to it and so on and so
right,
forth.
Right.
Something else I'll just quickly mention is that I did a study a while back a few years on the issue of borderline personality disorder, which is a connective, really an emotional a disconnection, an inability to have a sense of self and to see other people's reactions to you everywhere as determining who you are. And it has levels and so on. But I just examined the social science index literature over four-year periods from 64 on, just looking for articles that had the word borderline in them. And in the first four-year group, it was one or two, and then it went up you know, to maybe six. But then it went up dramatically to like 36 and then 80-something and then 160-something in four-year groups. That, to me, is as much a diagnostic indicator of this culture as anything I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just something to be aware of, that we don't have a culture that's encouraging human development. We're having a culture that encourages human development in terms of economics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is underneath a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Kurt, so much for your perceptive call. Dr. Davis, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I'm fascinated by the study that he did, and I think that ultimately the most important take-home message from what Kurt said is the importance of connections between people, and those can be worked on, but they have to be worked on. They don't really come about naturally. They need to be worked on in order to have them be the most meaningful in people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. We're looking this hour at a new national poll on children's health, part of the University of Michigan Department of Pediatrics and Communicable Diseases and the Child Health Education and Research Unit in the University of Michigan Division of Pediatrics. And our guest is talking about these findings, and we're welcoming your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number, 227-2050, if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Lines are open now. They've been quite busy. Chris from Omro. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I originally wanted to talk about childhood obesity, but as I've heard the comments, I was an alcohol and drug abuse and sexual abuse counselor for teens who were abusing and being abused and codependency. And the biggest thing I found is that the child was the symptom of a family problem, and it was the family that needed to really be addressed as a totality of all the old rules in the family, like, for example, eating, clean your plate, the charging, starving children in Africa.
Right.
You know, that if there's not a core family there to support, the child's going to grow up like a weed, and they'll get their guidance from their peers around them. And I found that, especially with gifted and talented kids, if you don't catch them by the sixth grade, they're starting to drink and use. And most of the violence that we see in schools are symptoms of mental health behavior that's not treated. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you, Chris. Dr. Davis.
Well, I think Chris is right on point as far as a lot of behavioral problems reflecting unaddressed mental health issues. And for example, I had a patient recently brought to me because he had been a good student, but he had abruptly engaged in some violent vandalism. And my approach was one of asking the family to come in, and I talk with the teen and with his parents, and our approach has been one where we've approached it as a group, not singling him out, but rather trying to understand the roots of what's going on for him and trying to nip it in the bud at this first episode, or the first known episode. So, and this is supported by literature, that you really do have to identify the family unit that the teen or the child is most strongly connected to and takes cues from and work with them. But Chris is also right that in some ways, when something's already happened, you're already behind the eight ball. And the whole issue of prevention is one that is a tremendous challenge. And what some folks have done in some communities is to try to set up parenting workshops to try to help parents who feel like they may not have a strong sense of how they want to manage behavioral issues, to give them some ideas and also give them a network of other parents that they can rely on and swap strategies with. So those are our positive responses to this challenge. I think that parenting is not easy.
No.
And the more that parents can share successful strategies and share also the challenges and the disappointments and the frustrations and the joy, that can be a really positive approach.
Right. You know, and I'm reflecting again on something that Kurt was saying, because of these time constraints, and that really rings home for a lot of people. You got all kinds of things going on during the week. It's you're working, and you got to go grocery shopping, and you got events for your children. It keeps us from being able to be connected with the very people who could help us, and that's other parents too, and help us with time arrangements for our children, or just I'll take your child for a while, you take my child for a while. We're all off in our own worlds, and we're missing, I think, that connection, Dr. Davis, that could be so valuable for our mental health. We just don't have time to arrange all of it.
It is pretty overwhelming how the time seems to evaporate.
Right.
But
sure
I think
does.
There are ways to try to reserve time and say no to different opportunities that you may want to say yes to, because it seems like, well, it wouldn't take that much time, would it? But in fact, just about everything takes more time than you think.
That's right.
And so many of us end up in that awkward position where we find that we don't have nearly enough time to do the things we want, because we're busy doing the things that we probably shouldn't have said yes to.
The National Poll on Children's Health, our conversation this hour. And our guest is Dr. Matthew Davis. He's director of the National Poll, associate professor of pediatrics, communicable diseases, internal medicine, and public policy at the University of Michigan. Our phone number, and thank you very much for your call, Chris, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, Milwaukee area 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with Sherman Alexie, who's a wonderful writer. His most recent work is Flight. He's the author of The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven and a number of other books. His work greatly influenced by Kurt Vonnegut. And he's a Native American writer. He grew up dirt poor on a reservation just outside Spokane, Washington. And he'll be with us to talk about his most recent book, Flight, which, you know, the hour is kind of dovetailed because it's about a 15-year-old who calls himself Zitz, and he's a lonely kid and commits an act of violence. So we'll talk about his latest book, and that's after the news from National Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Dr. Matthew Davis. It's Rose next from Chatfield, Minnesota. Hi, Rose.
Top of the morning to the Irish lass.
And to you as well, Rose.
And the children are my favorite group of people. And I live in a very small community, less than 2,000. And so I hark around. I call them larks. I say, hark, you little larks. And I call adults larks as well. And I happened to be going by this group of kids. They were 6th and 7th graders Friday evening as I was walking along. And one of them called me. I volunteered for her T-ball when she was 5. And so there were about 8 or 9 of them. So I went over and they said, Rose, will you play with us? And I said, okay. And they all had cell phones. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. I said, you're interrupting You're interrupting the honeybees. You can't be using those cell phones. And I said, I'm not going to play with you if you have cell phones. So they all, you know, got rid of these cell phones. And we start playing these games. There were three boys, and I didn't know what we were going to play. They hung onto hands, and I said, okay, I'm going to draw a circle on your back and whatever. And I played with these kids for, I mean, I was exhausted. 2 hours later, you know, and they're going, I said, do you want to go and hear these frogs? You know, I said, there's some really cool frogs down here. And they're so fabulous. Children are so fabulous. And I saw one of them this morning. He's going, hey, Rose, is that you? And it's like, all they want is, I mean, I'm an adult. I love it when an adult or a child listens to me and talks to me. I feel better, and I'm ready to rock and roll. I mean, they're just, you know, and I taught school in Southern California many years ago when violence wasn't a word, and I never heard of anybody being killed, nor did the children that I taught. And I had one child that was, in those days, they called him hyperactive, so I brought him special things to do. But now today, you know, these kids are not hyperactive. They're just watching too much television. They're staying up too late at night, and they're drinking a lot of soda. I mean, they're truly not needing all these drugs that, you know, these lobbyists. But I just had to call in for the larks. I mean, because they're so fabulous, you know, and they want to tear down trees in our park and put in new playground equipment. And all of the playground equipment works. It's all great. 10 kids can get on it. Adults can get in it. And I'm in parks, and there are no children in our parks.
Yeah. Dr. Davis.
Well, Rose points out one of the main reasons that we're doing this national poll on children's health, and that is that children are our treasure. And, you know, there's the old song about children are our future, and yet while we might believe that and speak those words, we're not really doing as much as we might to try to safeguard the future if children are the future. So I think that what she points out is the great value of play, and also she her comments really connect to Kurt, the earlier caller, who was talking about the importance of personal connections.
Mm-hmm.
And kids really do want to make personal connections. They're comfortable making those connections. They don't have a lot of the social baggage that we have by the time we're adults. And I think her example is a great one to try to make time to volunteer in your community, whether that's some formal volunteering activity or whether it's something that you just fashion on your way to the store. I mean, it's really it's a great example of a way that somebody can make a difference for a few kids in a very positive way.
Thanks, Rose, very much for your call. Always like to hear from you. We go next to Salmid, is it, from Racine? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please. Turn your radio down.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll go back to you and have you do that because you can't have the radio. It takes too much time, so we'll be back to you in a minute. Marty is next from Green Bay. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've been doing programs against domestic abuse for almost 10 years, but I'm really believing more and more that if we address the issue of alcohol as a disease, that will just do that domino effect of curing a lot of things. That why aren't we as a nation more aggressive against the disease of alcohol? And as a personal note, I've lost two siblings to drunk drivers.
Oh, gee.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear about the personal side of it for you. Certainly, as a physician, alcohol is a really pervasive issue, and one that I mentioned earlier I think is very silent in our communities because, to some extent, alcohol is accepted in moderation. The problem is that moderation is quite a variable definition for many people, and it doesn't take much beyond moderation to get into trouble and develop a dependency for alcohol. I agree with you that the problem of alcohol abuse does often lead to many other problems in terms of interpersonal relationships, whether it becomes abuse or some other issue. And many times when there are challenges for my patients, if there's alcohol involved, it's making things so, so much worse. And so I certainly agree that we need to have a more open conversation about how to address the problem of alcohol abuse and how to talk about it in a way that makes it safe for somebody to say, I have a problem and I need help.
And is there some way we're doing this now or is it totally up to individual school districts and certainly up to individual families? But are we taking on some of these issues in a systematic way, Dr. Davis? And is that the way to do it? So all these conversations about alcohol and prescription drugs and obesity and sexually transmitted diseases and all of that is taken up as part of your studies somehow, some way?
Well, I should say I'm not an expert in substance use or alcohol abuse other than my clinical work. It is not my research focus. What I'm struck by is that so many different communities around the U.S., whether it's at the school level or at the community level or at the state level, have different approaches that they've adopted, whether it's related to alcohol use, say, for example, on college campuses or sexual education in schools. And so you have situations where there may be, for example, a strong feeling that it should be abstinence that's taught in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will feel strongly that that's the way to go, and others will say, but it's not realistic. You're not actually having the discussion about it. On the other hand, I think there's also a concern that if you have an open discussion about sexual behavior, it may actually encourage it. And so there really is no, I think the fallacy here is to think that there's a one-size-fits-all approach.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're human beings, and human beings have different ways of going about life, and we don't think there's going to be a one-size-fits-all approach to many behaviors. Why should we think there's going to be a one-size-fits-all approach to these some of the most challenging and deeply concerning behaviors such as alcohol use and sexual behaviors?
Thanks so much for the call, Marty. Let's go to Salmon again now from Racine. Hi. Salmon, are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Hello. What I wanted to say is that did anyone ever look at food, hormones in food, in milk, in meat, genetically modified grains, vegetables? Actually, we are the first people and the only people who are eating that. I'm not surprised that children are like they are, because the added hormones in milk from very little on, they do damage, I would say.
Changes in our food patterns, Dr. Davis.
Well, the caller is correct that certainly we have seen more additives to food, and the recent news over the past couple of weeks has certainly illustrated the potential risks of food additives, whether it's hormones or preservatives or various other things that are used as supplements in our food chain these days. We did ask about the problem of food contamination, mm-hmm. In our poll that did not rank among the top 10, although about 6 or 7% of adults said it was a big health problem for children. So there are adults out there who are like the caller who are quite concerned about the issue of food not being safe to eat.
And thanks for the call. We go next to Joan from Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment was about sports. We've had our children in sports for 10 years. Right now they're 18 and 16. It's been a wonderful experience for them physically, emotionally. They've got a great support group of kids. Some of those kids have changed. There are different children in the mix now. It's all been good. We haven't had any derogatory experiences, and now they're in high school sports, and it's been a wonderful experience for them. Our kids are both academic all-conference as well. It's just been a real good leadership experience for them, and personally, they've made great friends. They know how to take care of themselves, and they're good. They're survivors. So I think it's, for us, it's been a wonderful experience. And I know some people say there's too many sports, you know, academics should be, you know, first on the list, which they are at our house. And things do get hectic.
Mm-hmm.
That's my comment.
All right. Thanks for the call. Dr. Davis.
Well, Joan points out the real benefits of activities and membership in different organizations, community groups that can really benefit kids. It isn't just the family that's important. It is belonging to groups that help focus kids on common goals,
mm-hmm.
and can serve as an opportunity to work out how you're going to get to a particular goal and how you're going to do it as a team and that sort of thing. So sports can be good for that. Music can be good for that. Art can be good for that. There are so many good examples. And the ones that I worry about are not so much the ones who are participating. The ones I worry about are the kids who are not participating.
Right.
And so that's when I ask, so what do you do after school? And it doesn't include the sort of formatted type of opportunities. That's when I really get extra concerned and speak to the teen, the child of the teen, and the parents about opportunities in their communities that they might want to get involved in.
Thanks, Dr. Davis, so much for being with us this hour and for doing the report as well. It's an important one. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Matthew Davis, he is the director of the National Poll on Children's Health done by the University of Michigan Department of Pediatrics and Communicable Diseases and the Child Health Evaluation and Research Unit at the University of Michigan. The new poll looking at the top 10 health concerns that adults have when it comes to children in our society. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Mimi Notstein for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Wednesday Conversation here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.